Krishna Pala Bhagavad Hari Gopi Jana Bala Bhagavad Hari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanata Hari Yamuna Tira Vanata Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Om Vishnupad, Parvahamsa Parvraj, Kachara Sutera, Siddhashri, Shimra's Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, ISKCON Founder Charya, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Samaveda Bhaktivedanta Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're going to read today from the Srimad Bhagavatam. I'm sorry, the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, verse 1. This chapter of chapter 9 is called the Most Confidential Knowledge. So the very first verse is a very important one because it covers very important ideas. It talks about the nature of confidential knowledge, the process of receiving confidential knowledge, what is the result of that, and what is the qualification. So let's, I guess we'll just listen to the verse in purport since we don't have our board working. I don't know if someone can turn it up. I don't think it's loud enough. It's on, but it's not up enough. We always turn it down for the kirtan. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Idam Tu Te Guyatamam. You all know it, good. Ravishyam Yanusuyave Gyanam Vigyanam Sahitam Yajgyatvya Mokshise Subhat. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, My dear Arjuna, because you are never envious of me, I shall impart to you this most confidential knowledge and realization, knowing which you shall be relieved of the miseries of material existence. Purport. As a devotee hears more and more about the Supreme Lord, he becomes enlightened. This hearing process is recommended in the Srimad Bhagavatam. The messages of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are full of potencies, and these potencies can be realized if topics regarding the Supreme Godhead are discussed amongst the devotees. This cannot be achieved by the association of mental speculators or academic scholars, for it is realized knowledge. The devotees are constantly engaged in the Supreme Lord's service. The Lord understands the mentality and sincerity of a particular living entity who is engaged in Krishna consciousness and gives him the intelligence with which to understand the science of Krishna and the association of devotees. Discussion of Krishna is very potent, and if a poor, fortunate person has such association and tries to assimilate the knowledge, then he will surely make advancement towards spiritual realization. Lord Krishna, in order to encourage Arjuna to higher and higher elevation in his potent service, describes this in the ninth chapter matters more confidential than any he has already discussed. The very beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, the first chapter, is more or less an introduction to the rest of the book. And in the second and third chapters, spiritual knowledge described is called confidential. Topics discussed in the seventh and eighth chapters are specifically related to devotional service, and because they bring enlightenment and Krishna consciousness, they are called more confidential. But the matters which are described in the ninth chapter deal with unalloyed pure devotion. Therefore, this is called the most confidential knowledge. One who is situated in the most confidential knowledge of Krishna is naturally transcendental. He therefore has no material pangs, and although he is in the material world, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it is said that although one has a sincere desire to render loving service to the Supreme Lord is situated in a conditional state of material existence, he is to be considered liberated. Similarly, we shall find the Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter, that anyone is engaged in that way is a liberated person. Now, the first verse has specific significance. The words idam jnanam, this knowledge, refers to pure devotional service, which consists of nine different activities: hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshiping, praying, obeying, maintaining friendships, and surrendering everything. By the practice of these nine elements of devotional service, one is elevated to spiritual consciousness, Krishna consciousness. When one's heart is thus cleared of material contamination, one can understand the science of Krishna. Simply to understand that a living entity is not material is not sufficient. That may be the beginning of spiritual realization, but one should recognize the difference between activities of the body and the spiritual activities of one who understands that he is not the body. In the seventh chapter, we've already discussed the opulent potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his different energies, the inferior and superior nature, and all the material manifestation. Now in chapter 9, the glories of the Lord will be delineated. The Sanskrit word anusuyave in this verse is also significant. Generally, the commentators, even if they're highly scholarly, are envious of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even the most erudite scholars write on Bhagavad Gita very inaccurately. Because they're envious of Krishna, their commentaries are useless. The commentaries given by devotees of the Lord are bona fide. No one can explain Bhagavad Gita or give perfect knowledge of Krishna if he is envious. One who criticizes the character of Krishna without knowing him is a fool. So such commentaries should be very carefully avoided. For one who understands that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the pure and transcendental personality, these chapters will be very beneficial. Om Gyanat Varandasha Gnanjana Salakaya Chaksurun Mitamina Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Panchagopa Tirubhischa Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha Patitano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So, First, in this purport, Srila Prabhupada discusses a little bit about the Bhagavad Gita and its overall organization. It's a systematic progression. He says the first chapter is more or less an introduction. It sets the ground. The setting is there on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. The second and third chapters describe confidential spiritual knowledge, which is basically the nature of the soul and the difference of the soul from the body. Then third, fourth, and fifth chapters tend to be more about different processes like karma yoga, jnana yoga, like that. And then, actually, the middle six chapters are considered to be the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. 6 through 12 are really the most important in terms of pure spiritual knowledge. So, Prabhupada says the seventh and eighth are called more confidential, and the ninth, and also along with the tenth, are considered most confidential because they describe pure devotional service and with no other processes, no other contamination, nothing diluting that pure process of bhakti. So we're talking about confidential knowledge, so of course you might ask, what is confidential knowledge? And that, of course, is developed throughout this chapter. And Krishna says that he will explain jnanam vijnanam sahitam, knowledge and realized knowledge. Now that's interesting, because we see these words in a few places in Bhagavad Gita and the other scriptures, jnanam and vijnanam, and they sometimes have different meanings. But here, basically, jnanam, in terms of knowledge, Prabhupada said it means knowledge of bhakti. So we've gone through many different types of knowledge, and now the knowledge of devotional service to Krishna is considered jnana. And then vijnana sahitam, this culminates actually in direct realization of Krishna. So it is sometimes it's considered to be like sort of intellectual knowledge versus realized knowledge. So vijnana means realized knowledge or experienced knowledge, something that one very deeply brings into one's heart and is able to understand on a very, very deep spiritual basis. And that's what Krishna is saying, that he is going to give this knowledge which will give direct experience to the living entity of himself and the relationship between Krishna and the jiva soul. So when we talk about knowledge, Krishna says he's imparting knowledge to himself. Now that's not a unitary concept, because Krishna, of course, entails everything. So it's hard to say, well, what is knowledge in one word or one sentence? Because Krishna will impart knowledge of himself, about his own form, his sarup, but also his energies, his activities, his expansions, his whole creation, the material world, how it's all interacting, the jiva souls, where do we fit into all of that? And then all the interactions between these different elements. So the Bhagavad Gita systematically goes through all of these things. And in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, which is a very wonderful exploration of the entire philosophy of Krishna consciousness that Srila Prabhupada gives, he talks about the five topics that constitute knowledge, which are God or Krishna, Ishvara, Jiva, the living entity, Prakriti, which is matter, material energy, this material world, and the interrelationships between them, which are two other principles, which is karma, which means activity. Karma, we often think of meaning like reactions, but karma means both, means action and reaction. And also time, kala, the time factor. So these five, Prabhupada says, are really the subject matters of the Bhagavad Gita. And so now we are getting to a point where Bhagavad Gita gets very interesting and very deep and gets deeply into the topic of Krishna and Krishna's relationship and with the living entity and our relationship with him in terms of bhakti yoga. So this knowledge is about Krishna. Knowledge about Krishna, understanding Krishna, is often called sambandha. But we also learn how one serves, how one attains Krishna. What is the practice, the sadhana, that would bring us, that spiritual path that brings us to Krishna? You know, so that also is there. So as long as along with sambandha, there also has to be the practice. And then ultimately to the perfectional stage. So the words idam jnanam, this knowledge, does refer to pure devotional service. And Prabhupada says that consists of the nine processes: hearing, chanting, remembering, serving, worshiping, praying, obeying, maintaining friendship, and surrendering everything. So these nine processes are given in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam by Prahlad Maharaj, that are the basic ways that devotees worship Krishna. It's our process of coming from a state of being very ignorant, not having much knowledge, not being very aware of spiritual life, to gradually coming to deeper and deeper understanding, to the point where we can, you know, be actually serving Krishna, serving God in a very nice way, and we can feel that inner advancement that we are making as we come closer and closer to Krishna. And Prabhupada says there's two simple ways that you can tell if you're making advancement in Krishna consciousness. How much are you giving up your attraction for material life, and how much are you becoming attracted to Krishna in Krishna's service? So through practice, we develop that attraction for Krishna. So it's a very wonderful process. So through the ninth chapter, verses gradually tell us more and more about how to serve Krishna, and it finally culminates the last verse, 934, Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru mamevaishyasi yap yukvayvam atmana matparayana. Engage your mind always in thinking of me, become my devotee, offer obeisance to me, and worship me. Being completely absorbed in me, surely you will come to me. So this is actually, in a sense, it's almost like a synopsis of the nine processes. Think of me, become my devotee, offer obeisances, worship me. Do all of these practices. Because those different practices of sadhana bhakti absorb the mind in Krishna. And that's really the point. You know, we say that probably the beginning, the most important, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Svaranam, hearing, chanting, and remembering. So we hear through Bhagavad Gita, we hear an association of devotees about Krishna. We chant Krishna's names as we just did in Kirtan, or through our japa, through our meditation, our chanting and glorifying Krishna. And that leads to remembering. So that remembrance is very important, and that's one of the key concepts, that we need to be able to remember Krishna. Prabhupada says we want to get to a point where we remember Krishna 24 hours a day. Now, that's somewhat idealistic for most of us, but still, that is the goal. And it becomes more of a reality the more we practice. As one hears and one chants, one naturally will remember Krishna. You hear about Krishna, you read about him, you read the pastimes of Krishna, you will naturally think of him. Those things will be there in the mind. They'll be there in the consciousness. It's actually a fairly simple scientific process, and it works. We just ask everybody to try it. Try hearing and chanting, remembering, and see what the results are. So, Krishna's also talking about, in this verse in Prabhupada and the purport, about the process of receiving confidential knowledge. Now, how does this confidential knowledge transmit it? Okay, Krishna has this knowledge, we're here, we don't have knowledge. How does it get from Krishna to us? And that's part of what he's talking about. First of all, of course, he's directly speaking. He's speaking to Arjuna directly. Now, most of us don't have the good fortune of Arjuna as having Krishna, you know, sitting on the chariot there with us and giving us personal instruction, you know, but he also leaves these instructions in the form of the Bhagavad Gita, which is part of the larger work of the Mahabharata, you know, for all the people of the world to be able to find these instructions, read these instructions, and even 5,000 years now later, we're all reading this Bhagavad Gita, we're hearing Krishna's instructions. So that value, because of the nature of sound vibration, spiritual sound vibration, is such that it's really no different. It's no different hearing, as Arjuna did 5,000 years ago, as us reading these verses, the Sanskrit, Prabhupada's English, to help us understand, that we can get the same benefit. The difference is really more the receiver, isn't it? The difference between Arjuna and ourselves, that Arjuna was a pure devotee, you know, completely surrendered to Krishna, Krishna's dearest friend, and so therefore he was able to completely understand and absorb and act purely upon those instructions of Krishna. But we have that same opportunity through that hearing. Now, besides that, and leaving his words to the Shastra, scriptures, he also guides his sincere devotees from within as the Supersoul. The Paramatma from within is within the heart of every jiva within this world. And so Krishna is always giving guidance. And he also, Prabhupada makes a big point here in the purport that he speaks through his devotees, through discussing about Krishna, talking about Krishna, conversing through the association of devotees, hearing about Krishna through devotees, and of course, particularly through the guru, the pure devotee, then one becomes very absorbed in spiritual knowledge and one is given spiritual understanding and realization within the heart. So how does Krishna guide within as the Paramatma or the Supersoul? In the purport, Prabhupada says, the Lord understands the mentality and sincerity of a particular living entity who is engaged in Krishna consciousness and gives him the intelligence to understand the science of Krishna and the association of devotees. So one principle that's very important is for devotees is that we understand, or we try to understand and appreciate the ongoing guidance, the care, the love, the help that Krishna is always giving us from within. Krishna's in our heart, absolutely, and he's guiding all the wanderings of all living entities. So I was thinking about how Krishna helps direct devotees, helps direct all of us through all the different stages of our advancement through the process of basically coming from being totally ignorant within this material world, knowing very little about spiritual life, to the point of perfection. Because Krishna is always there, out of his love for the living entities, his mercy and his compassion. So prior to devotional service, for just everyone, basically all living entities, all the jivas wandering in this material world, he's generally giving guidance and direction. There's, of course, the verse in the 1861 in the Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Hridayeshir Dhinatishtati, Ramayan Sarva Bhutani Jantarutani Vayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as if a machine made of material energy. So, of course, seated on the machine is the body. The jiva, soul, enters the body, becomes, you know, we, the real us, the jiva, the soul that's within, comes into one body after another, lifetime after lifetime. But we're getting guidance, we're getting help, because Krishna as the super soul enters into every single body of every single living entity, life after life after life, to give the guidance. So that's what we see, how the super soul is even guiding the plants and animals, you know, how to live, how to get by, how to do things in their life, which, you know, there's, when you think about it, there's things that they would never know how to do. You know, things that scientists call instinct that animals have. Well, what is instinct? It's basically a term to explain a phenomena they don't understand. You know, because, you know, sometimes in science, if we put a label on something, we think that we have comprehension of the concept, when we really don't. We've just really named it. So what we see, Prabhupada actually said what instinct was. He said it's actually a combination of learned behavior and the super soul guiding the living entity. That's why geese fly south in the winter and back north in the spring. How do they know where to go? Well, of course, you can say, well, they follow the other ones, but, you know, there had to be a first one somewhere that knew where to go. No, they're being guided. So every living entity is being guided and being helped by the Supreme Lord. But we're not so interested in that. That's just basically material life, and that's what we're trying to kind of get out of, get away from. But for those sincere souls, Krishna gives intelligence to know Krishna from within. In Bhagavad Gita 15:15, it says, Sarvasya chaham kiri sanivishto mataksmatir gyanamapoanam cha. That he's seated in everyone's heart, and from him comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. We think, well, how does forgetfulness help? Well, if you want to remember Krishna, he will help you to remember him. If you want to forget him, he will help you to forget. And we can see that there are millions and millions of human beings out there that are trying very hard to forget Krishna and are succeeding by Krishna's help. In other words, they're probably even said that even the atheists who have arguments against God, Krishna as the super soul then gives them those arguments against him, because that's what they want. That's their desire. He's fulfilling it. So he's impartial in that way. Now, for one who's devoted to Krishna and is making a sincere attempt to attain him, he says, Bhagavad Gita 10:10, Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam, says, I give the intelligence to come to me. So Krishna is directing the sincere soul to him, to the guru, to the devotees, to the sadhus. And knowing Krishna through hearing from devotees is very much emphasized, of course, at all times, but in this purport, Srila Prabhupada says, the message of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are full of potencies, and these potencies can be realized if topics regarding the Supreme Godhead are discussed amongst devotees. So there's that emphasis there, is that it's very difficult to understand spiritual life on one's own. I mean, I suppose there are some people, but if you just had a book and you were in the middle of nowhere and you never met any other person, any other spirit soul, any other seeker of truth, and you just, you know, even if you had Bhagavad Gita, it'd probably still be very difficult to figure everything out and know what to do and know if you're on the right track. So the association of devotees is very, very important, and particularly hearing from the spiritual master, one who can guide one on the path of spiritual life. So this description of how Krishna arranges this, it's a nice description in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Madhya Lila, chapter 19. The verse, Parmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagyavan Jiva Guru Krishna Prasade Paya Bhakti Lata Beach. It's Madhya 19:151. According to their karma, all living entities are wandering throughout the entire universe. Some of them are being elevated to the upper planetary system, and some are going down to the lower planetary systems. Out of many millions of wandering living entities, one who is very fortunate gets an opportunity to associate with a bona fide spiritual master by the grace of Krishna. By the mercy of both Krishna and the spiritual master, such a person receives the seed of the creeper of devotional service, Bhakti Lata Bij. So this Bhakti Lata Bij is very, very important. It's like that, it's the seed, it's a plant within us, just like a small seed is planted in the garden and whether it's properly watered, nourished, and all of that, it grows and grows until it finally bears fruit. So in the same way, the seed of the Bacula de Bij, the devotional creeper, grows in that certain way, same way. And it's nourished by the processes of hearing and chanting. And of course, you have to carefully guard it, protect it from the weeds, which are offenses, and so many other things like that. But eventually it grows, and it's described, it grows all the way through the creeper, which that creeper's like a vine. It penetrates all the layers of the material universes and finally comes and bears fruit at the lotus feet of Krishna. So that happens, but it happens by the mercy of the spiritual master when one makes that connection. Another nice verse, Srimad Bhagavatam 1.18.13. The value of a moment's association with a devotee of the Lord cannot be compared even to the attainment of the heavenly planets or liberation from matter. What to speak of any worldly benediction, a form of material prosperity, which is for those who are meant for death. In other words, you can't take it with you. You have material prosperity, but everybody dies in the end. So, material wealth, going to heavenly planets, being liberated, nothing is as important to the living entity as that association with a devotee of the Lord, because that plants the seed. That's the beginning of one's service, the beginning of one's going back to Krishna, remembering Krishna, learning how to relate with Krishna, serve Krishna, love Krishna again. And once we receive that seed of devotional service, our life is permanently changed. Our spiritual life has really begun. So what is the result? As described in this verse, the result of receiving confidential knowledge states here that one becomes freed from material miseries. Well, many of us have been devotees for many years, and you might say, do you ever have any material problems, material miseries? Well, yes, we do. So how are we free of material miseries? Yeah. It's not because it's not the same. Because we know that those material miseries are happening to the body and the mind, the gross and subtle body that we inhabit, and they may be troublesome, but it's not really about us. It's not really, yes, it is happening to us in a sense. I mean, we're not impersonal about it. You know, it's not like you come and kick someone in the leg and say, well, you're not your body, you know, it shouldn't bother you, right? No, of course. I mean, you know, you have to use your intelligence about these things. But the fact is that it's completely different if you understand that what is happening to you is not actually happening to you, because you are the spirit soul that is within the body and not the body and the senses themselves. So the spirit soul is pure, is uncontaminated, it is full of knowledge, it is a brilliant spark of light, and of course it has its original spiritual form, has a wonderful relationship with Krishna, a loving relationship with Krishna that is there, but it is dormant. It is within us, and it is covered. It's covered by the material body, these material senses. First, it's covered by what's called false ego, ahankara. We come into this material world, and the first covering that we contact is ahankara. Ahankara means, I think that I am something other than what I really am. It's called false ego. Ego means identification, right? Even in psychology, you say the ego is how we identify ourselves. So false ego means I think I am this body, these senses, I am male, I'm female, I'm American, I'm Indian, whatever. All of these bodily designations that are false. And once we think that we are these things, that's the I, then we think mine. So I am this body, and all these things are mine. All of this that I can accumulate, all of this wealth, this is all mine. So this is the ignorance, for lack of a better word, that we fall into within this material world. And so, unfortunately, all of those designations of I and mine cause us misery. They cause us unhappiness. Because to have something usually means to lose something. Even if you can hold on to it for a while, as we said, at the time of death, everything is taken away. One is cast into another lifetime, another body, and goes through the process over and over again, and generally entails probably more suffering than happiness. But there's a little bit of happiness in the material world, and there's usually a little bit or a lot of unhappiness, of misery. So that's why it says that it relieves one from material miseries. Now, you might say, well, one has to be very highly realized for this to happen. Not actually. In the Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami explains that the very beginning processes, in the first process of sadhana yoga, sadhana bhakti, that there are two things that happen. One is the relief from all material miseries, klesha gna, and the other is all auspiciousness. Like all, in other words, all good things, all favorable, positive things are there in one's life, and the relief of material miseries is there even at the beginning stage of Krishna consciousness. Now, of course, as you go to the other stages of bhava, prema, there's other additional benefits that are there. But those are there right from the beginning, and those are experienced by devotees when we take them up. So Prabhupada says here that one who takes up Krishna consciousness is actually on a liberated platform. He says in the purport we just read, in the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, it is said that although one has a sincere desire to render loving service to the Supreme Lord, is situated in the conditional state of material existence. That means we're not quite pure. We're still somewhat identifying with the body, the mind. He is considered liberated. Similarly, we find in the Bhagavad Gita that anyone who's engaged in that way is a liberated person. So the idea here is that one who sincerely follows a liberated person, following a pure process of Krishna consciousness, of bhakti yoga, can be considered liberated because one is on the path. One is on that right direction. One is going to end up, that will be the destination. That doesn't mean that we're pure at this point. We still probably have quite a bit of work to do before we become completely purified and completely surrendered to Krishna. But one can say that one is in, at least that one is on the liberated process, the process of liberation. And interestingly enough, the great devotees don't even care about liberation. They're not even very interested in it. Because what is liberation? Okay, you're not your body. And Prabhupada said later in his purport, didn't he say that just know you're not your body is not enough. You also have to know what are your activities with Krishna in the liberated state. In other words, sometimes people are interested in personal liberation. Just I become, you know, I just become consciousness. I just become free from misery. You know, I just get away from all these miseries in the material world. No, that's like a negative definition of spiritual life. A positive definition of spiritual life is that we engage in loving devotional service with Lord Krishna. You know, that we have, you know, that wonderful, blissful, full consciousness in experiencing with Krishna his whole variety of wonderful pastimes, which we read about in the Krishna book or 10th canto of, you know, Krishna in Vrindavan and Mathura and Dwarka and all the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. All these wonderful pastimes with the devotees are there that the Lord engages in, because that's actually what God likes to do. I think, you know, how many religions tell you this is what God likes to do every day, this is what he does for fun? Well, we know actually, because it's all there in the scriptures. You know, Krishna basically, his very essence is prema. His very essence is pure love. And he wants, and his nature is to totally expand that love. Now, not that I have any realization of this, but this is what I read from the Acharyas and the scriptures. That basically, this is what Krishna is about. Just expanding love more and more and more with more and more souls. So all the billions and trillions of jiva souls that are out here, all of us and all of the plants out there and animals, every single one of us have a relationship with Krishna. It's our own. It's our unique relationship. We are all eternal persons. That's the very first thing Krishna established, right? Back in the second canto. You know, all of us are eternal. You, me, and all these kings. We are all eternal. And we're all distinct and eternal, and we are all distinctly eternal. In other words, not that we go into some sort of undifferentiated mass of, you know, consciousness or white light or something at the end. No, we're people. Krishna's a person. Krishna's the supreme person, and that's one of the most wonderful things about him. You know, that his Swayamrupa, his original form, and that Swayamrupa has energies and engages those different energies in so many wonderful ways. And that is what this Vigyan is about, understanding our relationship with Krishna in bhakti, in love. Yeah. So if we continue to follow this process that Krishna gives us and the process given by Srila Prabhupada and the spiritual masters, then one comes to this liberated platform. And one more thing that Krishna says in this verse, he says to Arjuna, you are qualified to hear this because you are Anusuyadev, which means non-envious. So Prabhupada says that sometimes you see so many different scholarly interpretations, they're not effectual. In other words, it's not a matter of some academic presentation, you know, of the scripture or, you know, the Bhagavad Gita. Some of you may have seen other, I read Prabhupada's, I read somebody's Bhagavad Gita, and I didn't understand a word of it. It didn't mean anything to me. It's kind of interesting. It's kind of cool, you know, to read Bhagavad Gita. But it meant nothing. But when you come onto someone who is a pure devotee of Krishna, who is explaining Krishna, explaining Krishna's words, then it has that impact because they're not envious. Now, it seems like a strong word. At first, I used to wonder about that. Why do we say people are envious? A lot of times people say, I don't feel envious of God. But in actuality, we're all a little bit envious of God. And envy is what brought us to this material world. Because in some way or another, we all wanted the position of Krishna. We weren't satisfied, so to speak, to simply be a surrendered servant. People want to be master. So if Krishna says, okay, you don't have to serve me, you have free will. Not a lot of free will, but you have a little free will. We have minute free will. And that free will gives us the choice. He says, all right, if you don't want to serve me, here's a place for you. It's called the material world, Prakriti. You can come to this material energy. You can't be in the spiritual world because all the rest of the devotees are all serving me. We're all having a great time and loving relationships, you know. And so we don't want somebody who's envious and, you know, doesn't really want to be here. You don't want to be here? Here. Try it out. So that's what we did. And boy, wasn't that a mistake? What were we thinking? You know, sometimes you wonder that, right? How in the world? But anyway, nevertheless, but if we look, yeah, we can see that, you know, in so many ways we want to enjoy, we want to have things for ourselves, we want to be the little controllers of this and that. You know, we all have those tendencies. But we learn to give those up little by little. We learn to give up those things, the controlling tendencies, the wanting to be master, the want to be the Purusha. And understand we are Prakriti. We are the small servants of God. And when we realize that, there is great happiness. There's ecstasy. There's incredible ananda. Because our nature is such an ananda that we are eternal. We are fully conscious and we're fully blissful. We're fully happy. And that's what we want. And we look for that somehow or another, trying to find it in this material world. And it's futile. It's a totally futile attempt that we make. But once, by the mercy of Prabhupada, the mercy of our guru, that we understand that fact, and we turn from that and turn to Krishna, turn to Radha and Krishna, and try to always keep the remembrance of their lotus feet in our hearts, and always want to serve the lotus feet of the divine lords, then our whole life has changed. Then there's peace, then there's happiness, there's freedom from fear, freedom from anxiety. All of these things are there. So we just have to hear these words that Krishna is so wonderfully given us here in Bhagavad Gita, and Srila Prabhupada has presented to us with this wonderful Bhaktivedanta purports, and start the process of going back to Godhead. Okay, thank you all so much for your attention. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Are there any questions or comments or thoughts? Yeah. Is there a speaker or a microphone? Does anyone know? We don't seem to have anybody at the controls today.
My question just was, is the seed identified as something specific?
I'm sorry.
The seed of the creeper, is it identified as something specific?
Well, it's somewhat, of course, of a metaphor. You know, it's somewhat of a poetic, you know, but it's it means the beginning of bhakti, the beginning of devotion. And I guess the seed and the plant analogy, just a wonderful analogy, that's what Lord Chaitanya, of course, gave, you know, to explain it and how it grows and like that. I don't know do you have something more specific in your question? I can't say too much more about it, just that it's a very nice metaphor for the process of how devotional service grows and begins in us. Anyone else? What? Oh, in the back.
Thank you. You spoke about how we're different from Arjuna in that we're conditioned. So Can you describe a little bit about how transcendental sound vibration or transcendental energy gets through to the conditioned soul?
How does that transcendental sound vibration? Well, of course, all of our mantras and everything are in the Sanskrit language, which is, of course, in itself, it's a spiritual language. It's actually the language of the demigods, and I assume it's the language spoken in the spiritual world, although not quite. There's other times you see other things too, like Braj and other languages mentioned. But the difference between material sound vibration and the spiritual sound vibration is that spiritual sound vibration is non-different than the thing itself. There's actually a philosophical concept in, I don't know if it's epistemology or what, about a thing itself and the name of the thing. You know, like, this, whatever this is, let's say it's a table, and it's a podium, but okay, a table, I say it's a table, but you could say in Spanish it's a, what is it, mesa? Mesa, or whatever it might be. Different languages, every language calls something differently. So the name has no real direct connection. The sound vibration is saying table has no real relationship, only in that we designate a meaning. So that's the difference. In spiritual sound vibration, you don't have to designate a meaning, it's already there. So it's like when we say Krishna, and we say Krishna is in his holy name, he is in his holy name. Saying Krishna brings about the presence of Krishna. Krishna is there. Krishna is there in his name. It's one of his forms. Now, it's not his only form, you know, but it is certainly a form of Krishna. And so sound vibration has that difference. And therefore, it has great effect. The other thing is that it penetrates through all the different material coverings. You know, we have so many coverings, air, you know, earth, water, fire, air, earth, mind, intelligence, ego. You know, it's pretty hard to get down deep, you know, to, you know, the pure spirit soul, the jiva, located in the heart, we say. And so the spiritual sound vibration penetrates all the material coverings. It penetrates through the three modes of nature, all of that, and it actually directly affects the soul. And so it's operating and acting upon the soul, you know, where other sound doesn't really. It's really operating on our senses, our mind, and our intelligence on those levels. So it's operating on a completely different level within us. Yeah.
So Ray, how do we understand that the holy name...
So how do we understand that the holy name works on us only to the extent of our purity? So the more pure we are, the more that we can touch the holy name.
Yeah. It works both ways. The more we hear the holy name, the more pure we become, but the more pure we are, the more that we're going to appreciate, understand the holy name, and be consciously aware of its acting. In other words, if a person had never seen the devotees before and they go to a Ratha Yatra, and the Ratha Yatra and the chanting Hare Krishna are hearing it, they're getting benefit. It is penetrating, but they're just barely conscious of it. And they might think, well, that was really kind of interesting. And that might be the end of it, but that seed, of course, is planted. It's there. But for the devotee who's hearing it and then, you know, engaged in the kirtan, might be having this thing, oh, this was just an ecstatic kirtan. I had this wonderful spiritual experience, right? So in other words, to the degree that one is realized or the degree one is surrendered, it's going to certainly have more effect, and you're going to be very aware of that effect. Yeah.
Faith. And
yeah. I mean,
intention.
Advancement leads to advancement, right? I mean, it's like it's snowballing. Oh, here's one. Go ahead,
bro. Hare Krishna. Thank you for the great class. It's a little bit hard for me to accept or to talk about this, but I've heard that the only thing that can take all your bhakti is offending the devotees or blaspheming the devotees that have dedicated their whole lives to chanting the holy name. It's like an elephant going into a garden and tramples the whole garden.
Okay, what are you saying, offenses to devotees or criticism? Oh, yeah, that's something I didn't get to at the end. when you're talking about that idea of not being envious, one of the most important points is the way that we relate with other devotees, because it is described that, that's called the mad elephant offense, just like the elephant, you know, completely crushes your garden. So offenses to devotees, blaspheming the devotees, like that, it's very, very detrimental. There's Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavata has several stories like that where we see this instances of devotees And generally, and there's the story of course, Dhruva Maharaj and Ambarish, you know, all of these that show us the effects. I mean, when Dhruva Maharaj created an offense to Ambarish Maharaj, he ended up at the Sudarshan Chakra chasing him throughout the universe. So, I mean, it can be pretty severe. You know? So, yes. Now, it's described on a, more on our level that if one commits offenses to a devotee, the cure for it or the process is to try to beg forgiveness for that devotee. And then this is described, actually, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura explains this in Madhurya Kandambini, that if they will not accept your apology, then try to serve that devotee, trying to get to obtain their apology. And if that doesn't work, just chant Hare Krishna and hope that Krishna, you know, that you'll for forgiveness. That's, I mean, basically, it comes down after you chant Hare Krishna. But it's a very important one. Of the 10 offenses, Vishwanath has explained that there's two that are particularly important. The first one, offenses to devotees or blaspheming devotees, and also committing sinful activity on the strength of chanting. He says the other ones pretty much will resolve themselves through continued chanting, but those two, the devotee may have to suffer for.
So as devotees, as Vaishnavas, do we believe in eternal damnation, or can the garden grow back again?
No, there's no eternal damnation. Of course, Krishna will help you and guide you. And if you're sincere, he'll guide you how to rectify that offense. And you just have to sincerely try and do your best that you can with it. But, you know, it's interesting that I was just reading the other day in the Bhaktisandarbha, Jiva Goswami was saying that, of course, one should never criticize the Lord. And, of course, one should never criticize Vaishnavas. Said actually, one should never criticize anyone. He says, if you get, if by being in a critical mentality, even if other jivas, he says, it promotes a critical mentality within us, which will make it easy for us to cross that line to be critical of devotees. So better not to be critical. Better to try to find the good and see how Krishna is working and what the lesson is for us. In other words, we're very concerned about that. We make sure that the other person learns their lesson. We need to first see what our lesson is, right? Okay, is that all? I'll let you take your shot. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.